1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today. We missed you last week with FSU football. We're going to be kind of in and out over the next several months, of course, as we get into the FSU football season. Occasionally we will get preempted for FSU games or the pregame or the postgame. But you know, as often as we can, we will certainly be here to bring you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture and to make your day a little bit better by doing so. Whether you listen live on the air, of course, you can also listen to the podcast version of the show, which you can get anytime, any place, anywhere. So if you get, you know, you don't like football and you want to hear us on the off week, we won't have a new show, but you'll at least be able to listen to us. And full disclosure, we are actually recording in advance for during the week that we are preempted by FSU football. You'll kind of understand why I'm saying that as we get into the show a little bit here in a moment. But first, of course, joining me to do so is my co-host, Jeremy Branch.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm not a huge football fan, but I do kind of like this time of year because it kind of forces us to think outside the box and approach topics in ways that we don't when we're, you know, strictly looking back at the week. And I did want to mention while you're on the topic of pre-recording this episode, if you do want to listen to Let's Go Pensacola a day early every single week that we are going live on 92.3, just check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts. We're actually dropping the episodes on Fridays, not Saturdays. So you can get your fix of Julio and Jeremy just a little bit early if that's something you want to do.
Yeah, if for some reason you miss us, we're always there for you.
That's right. That's right.
Well, you know, it's been a tough week and a tough month and kind of a tough year, really. Like, I don't know what it is about years that end in six and celebrity deaths, but like this year so far, it really feels like the worst I can think of since 2016.
Like, refresh my memory, Julio. And yes, this is going to be a little bit more somber, but we are also going to celebrate the lives and the legacy of some great performers. But what are some of the major deaths in 2016 that I'm overlooking?
David Bowie, Carrie Fisher, George Michael,
yeah,
Prince.
Okay.
No, Prince was
big year.
No, wait, I'm sorry. Prince was, I think, before that. But yeah, just to put it over top. I mean, I was, those of you with long memories remember that I worked at the Pensacola News Journal for some time, as the entertainment editor. And, I wrote a column at the end of that year because it just seemed like every time we turned around, you know, Alan Rickman, you name it. Like there were so many that year, so many big ones that year that, I wrote a column at the end of the year about it. And, that year had kind of been bookended by David Bowie and Carrie Fisher. And like, it's especially when somebody is like reaches a certain level of status, for lack of a better term, where somebody is so well known that like, you know that everybody knows who they are.
I kind of said it. I don't think I ever published it, but it's like there are some artists that are so like woven into our collective tapestry, like culturally, that even if you don't know their work, you know them. And bring it back to 2026, this last couple of days has definitely been people that fall into that category, yeah, where even if you're not necessarily a fan of the genre of film or the genre of music that they made, they've definitely impacted your life in some way, you know?
And I would say not just artists, you know, they're public figures in general. Like, yeah. I mean, like you think about somebody like Muhammad Ali, you know, I would be hard pressed to think that there was a person on the planet that did not know who Muhammad Ali was.
That
was not in some way influenced by the life and career of that man. And, you know, you can look at, you know, it could be people from politics. It can be people from religion. It can be people from arts and letters. It can be people in the sciences, you know, certainly, you know, somebody like Neil Armstrong passes, everybody takes a moment and pauses because everybody knows that was the first man on the moon.
Where for somebody more in our ecosystem, the death of someone like Roger Ebert, that was really impactful to a certain group of us. But maybe Roger Ebert, while he was, you know, widely known, didn't cast as wide a net as some of the other people that you mentioned, like a David Bowie or something like that. So there is always going to be a niche group of people that are impacted by, you know, the loss of any person that has, you know, a body of work or, as you said, contributions to history. And it's tough to kind of quantify that, but there are definitely people that transcend all of that. Like, what are your own personal interests? And then somebody that is just like everybody knows.
Right. So, you know, we're going to spend the bulk of the show talking about three recent people. Well, yes, but three recent people that have passed that we feel in one way or the other kind of transcend the overall. But like, we don't want to make it seem like we're dismissing anybody else or that we're considering anybody else less than. So, you know, if we're not spending a lot of time talking about, say, Hayden Panettiere or Shelley Fabre or J.P. Morgan, or we just lost Michael Wright. We recently lost Glenn Hansard. You know, there's so many that I can name. Unfortunately, they've been coming very fast and furious lately. And, you know, Frank Beard from ZZ Top is another one I definitely want to mention. You know, I mean, the drummer from ZZ Top, just one of the most iconic rock bands of all time. But, you know, they're not necessarily household names.
And on that note, I did want to just interject and say that the loss of Hayden Panettiere is something that stands alone in this conversation. And this is just a Jeremy-specific broader point that I wanted to mention, where the passing of somebody that still has so many opportunities ahead of them and the passing of somebody whose life was tragically cut short, for me, hits a little bit different. As Julio, as you said to me before we started recording, there's no way to like rank or quantify grief. And so I'm not trying to say that it should matter more or less. It's just when people aren't at the end of their rope, at the end of their career, at the end of their natural lives, it can impact people a little bit differently. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't mourn the loss of people who live to the ripe old age of 80 and beyond. It just means to me that like they had a hell of a run and they have lived 10 lives worth of lives of normal, just everyday folk like myself, you know? So like I have just so much like admiration and respect for the people that we are going to be discussing, which I know we keep beating around the bush. Julio, you want to go ahead and tell them who we're talking about?
Well, I wanted to, let's stay on Hayden Panettiere for a minute there, because like, yes, absolute tragedy. I also wish that it feels like a tragedy that could have been avoided. And all these people that are crying out over her death, which I agree with, you should be crying out over her death, but were you paying attention to her 6 months ago?
And even if they were, though, what are we to do? Addiction is a powerful and illogical thing. So I don't bemoan people for not understanding the depth of that. And I don't know, would a fan letter or a DM have changed anything? I don't know. And I know that's not what you're saying, but,
I mean, it becomes
kind of fetishized celebrity deaths. That's a weird thing also.
Yeah. It can become a little bit performative and, you know, it's a tough situation. It has risen to this level of putting a false equivalency, and that disturbs me. You know, just there's so many other people that we've lost recently. You know, Victor Willis from The Village People, Bonnie Tyler, you know, the director Chuck Russell, Vincent Pastore from The Sopranos, whose character name I can't say on the show.
Great character.
Sam Neill, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to get in depth. And you'll get where we're talking about as we go on with the show. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 at AM 1620.
your way, so I'll go. But I know I'll think of you each step of the way, and I will always love you. I will always love you.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us. Almost feels sacrilegious to talk over that. We, of course, just recently lost Dolly Parton, who wrote that song and so many other songs, performed so many great songs, had a number of great films as an actor. And just, but I mean, like overall, like, You put aside all of that. Like, if that's all Dolly Parton was, what a loss. But when you look at the person that she was, the humanitarian, the person that believed in equality for all people, the person that it seemed like never met a stranger and loved everybody equally, no matter who they were or what they were. Like, just what a hole that leaves in the world.
Yeah, I am not going to come on here and pretend to be the biggest fan of Dolly Parton's music. Obviously, there's the standards, you know. There's a half dozen Dolly Parton songs that are just a part of our collective culture, which kind of ties back to something I said in the first segment. You've inevitably encountered Dolly Parton. I remember when we were in Nashville, Tennessee, a couple of months back, we stayed at a place called The Graduate. And The Graduate is a themed hotel that was all geared towards Dolly Parton. The bar upstairs was Pink Limousine, and there was all these, like, bachelorette parties and stuff there. But anyways, it was all done like Dolly Parton. And that was something I experienced not too long ago. And yeah, to your point, as an artist,
if all she ever did, if all she ever did as an artist was wrote I Will Always Love You and Jolene.
Yeah.
If that was all she had ever done, put aside everything else, she's an all-time great.
And past that, to your point, she was like, we tend to flatten down people once they pass and kind of deify people that we respect and stuff like that. But point me to one person who ever had anything bad to say about Dolly Parton. She literally just seemed like just a kind and empathetic person. And I'm a little turned off to the idea of people politicizing her, and even me bringing this up is essentially serving that very function. However, I will say what she did is put a lot of people on notice and reminded people that if you dedicate your life to helping people, like using your money to improve the lives of the people in the world, that's the best legacy you can leave behind. When Dolly passed, nobody has anything bad to say about her. She put good into this world, and we are so fortunate to have shared this tiny little speck on the timeline of history with somebody like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the number of things that she did. I mean, she was a philanthropist.
Yeah.
And like I said, she was somebody that loved everybody and gave to, you know, every kind of cause you could think that would do good in the world, whether it be children's literacy or whether it be helping.
She was real big on that because her father didn't know how to read. And she said she just imagined, because he was a smart man, if he would have just known how to read, she thinks his life would have been totally different. So she took that personal thing and she shared it with everybody and led this huge literacy program. There was this like buddy system thing that she did back in like 1989 at one of the little schools in Tennessee where the dropout rate was so high that she was like, find a buddy, And if the two of you graduate together, I'm going to give each of you $500. And $500 in 1989 was like, I don't know the conversion rate, but like $6 trillion today, which is a lot of money. So like, what a cool thing to use her own personal experience and share with people, you know?
Yeah, and it's just something that she did throughout her life. She was, you know, she was welcoming of all people. You know, she didn't, she was not a political person. I think she always said, I have my opinions, but I keep them to myself. But she didn't turn away anybody. And like in the way that like, I don't want to make this religious, but she was a religious person.
Yeah.
And you know, she was a Christian and she believed in what I feel like is what Christianity is supposed to stand for and purports to stand for. And that's, you know, treating the least of us as you would treat the best of us.
Yeah.
Treat, you know, doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, you know, loving everybody, no matter, you know, what their perceived flaws may be. And, you know, she was an activist for all communities.
And it's so funny that you say that on the heels of, she wasn't a political person in that she did have her opinions and she kept them to herself. And she used the word, like the thing that matters so much more than words is your actions. Like there's nothing that she could have said. There's no posturing. There's no F this guy or screw that guy tweet that she could have put out that would have had even a monochrome of the impact of just strictly living through your actions and bringing kindness and uplifting people. That's like, I know I'm being super sentimental about it, but I do feel like, you know, she grew up in an era before everything was about posturing and branding. And just by being Dolly Parton, she had the best branding of anybody. Like she was just so, seemingly just so good, and the world needs more people like that. And yes, it is a tragedy that she passed, but it also shines a light on what people are capable of at our very, very best. And if we can just aspire today to be just even an ounce more like Dolly Parton, I think the world would be a better place.
Yeah, it's so funny because she talked a lot in her life about the artifice of her appearance. You know, the famous quote from her is that it costs a lot of money to look this cheap. But you know, behind all the big wigs and the shiny costumes and all that was just like the most genuine human being on the planet.
Yeah, it seems that way.
And like that artifice was unable to obscure the genuine person underneath it all.
Yeah, well said, man. That's a really good point. And it's funny, I'm talking about her in context of being a brand. And I suppose that image was kind of her brand. But as you just now eloquently stated, it's like kind of contrary to what you would think of somebody superficially when you see Dolly Parton.
I think it was her brand, but I don't think that she thought of it as her brand.
No, people weren't thinking in those contexts prior to 2010. It's a disgusting way to look at the world.
I just don't think that she was that calculating. Like, I think she was very intelligent and very smart and made a lot of very smart business decisions. And, you know, she knew, for lack of a better term, where her bread was buttered. But it was never, she never did that in a way that took her away from being who she was. And I mean that not just in terms of like the person she was as a humanitarian, as an activist, et cetera, but the person she was as an artist.
Yeah.
Like never saw Dolly Parton do something that I felt like, oh, she's just doing that for money.
No,
you know, she was making, you know, bluegrass records when nobody was buying bluegrass records. You know,
I went and saw Jack Johnson the other night here at the Wharf, in Alabama, Orange Beach. And at the end, toward the end of their set, Jack and the band just kind of jammed out on nine to five. I saw they were like rehearsing it beforehand and they didn't nail it, but they went out there and they did it right there on the spot without even knowing all the lyrics, and everybody joined in singing together. And like, obviously that's the power of music in itself, but it also just shows the power of an artist like Dolly Parton, where just cross genres, cross generations, none of that stuff matters. Like, Dolly was a part of everybody.
Did you ever get to see her perform live?
No, I wish. Did you?
I did. I saw her the last time she performed here in Pensacola at the Bay Center.
Unbelievable. What year was that? Do you know?
Mid-2010s.
Incredible, man.
Yeah, and I actually, this was again when I was still working at the News Journal. I also sat in on a conference call interview with her before that, leading up to that tour. So I have spoken on the phone with Dolly Parton once, and
she was nice, huh?
Of course she was. But
that's,
you know,
amazing.
Again, it was a formal situation because it was, you know, 20 journalists on the phone with her, and, you know, each got one question, you know,
that
kind of thing.
Awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, so I got to have a little brief exchange with her and then got to go to the concert a couple of weeks later.
Just, you got a favorite song of Dolly's?
I mean, it's probably got to be Jolene. And I know that's cliche, but, you know, sometimes cliches are cliches for a reason. It's an amazing song.
Right.
It's just an incredibly structured song. It is a song that tells a story. It is completely relatable from beginning to end. There's so many other great ones. You know, I Will Always Love You.
I love a working class anthem, and that's why I am very partial to 9 to 5.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like she was doing some Springsteen kind of vibe stuff there, and I love that song as well.
9 to 5 is amazing, and that's honestly probably one of the first ones I was exposed to. I am just old enough to have seen the movie when it came out in theaters.
Great actress too, right?
Yeah. You know, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, and and again, you know, another great song from that, Hard Candy Christmas. It is impossible to sum up this person. It just is, you know, this is the icon of icons. I am hard pressed to think of the last person that was so universally beloved to pass. And I'm hard pressed to think of who's left.
Yeah. Will there be another one, in this current day and age? It's hard to say.
Not exactly like her. There will never be another one exactly like her. We've got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You got the touch. You got the power.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Got my co-host, Jeremy Branch, on the line with me. And we are talking about, unfortunately, a lot of people that we have lost recently in the last couple weeks, last couple months, I guess is fair to say. We're going to move on. And you know, I know we said we were going to spend the time talking about like the more iconic people that we lost recently. And some of you may not necessarily think of the person we're about to talk about as an icon. And I will say that, like, this is kind of a niche icon for lack of a better term.
For some people, a massive icon, and while maybe not as much to you or I, there's somebody listening that this person was had a profound impact on, I think is fair to say.
Sure. And we're talking about the voice actor Peter Cullen, who was most notably the voice of Optimus Prime, both in the original Transformers cartoons of the 80s, Transformers the movie, which that song, The Touch, is from, but also in all of the Michael Bay Transformers movies and all of the, I guess, Bumblebee. Does Bumblebee count in that universe or not? I'm not clear on that.
It has to. I mean, it has to.
I can tell you that it's the only good Transformers movie. Good live action.
You know, what's funny, you're right, Optimus Prime, for sure. I wasn't even aware until you and I were kind of doing a little pre-pro before we started recording, and you mentioned to me that he was the voice of Eeyore. So if you're a Disney adult like many of us are, or somebody that grew up going to the parks here in Florida, you'd inevitably have heard his work and are familiar with Eeyore. That's an iconic voice performance in its own right.
A long and storied career, and you know, we should go back to like, it comes to this thing of, you know, depending on what age you are, might be what you know him for. I mean, if you're Gen X, like young Gen X, older millennial, obviously it's going to be Optimus Prime first and foremost. But like before that, like the legendary Smothers Brothers comedy show, which was like the counterculture comedy TV series, variety series of the late 60s.
I don't even know about this.
Yeah. I mean, this was like one. It was like considered so subversive that like, It was killed after a couple of years, but it was hugely popular. And Peter Cullen was the announcer on that show.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, go back into the early 70s when Sonny and Cher had their variety show. Peter Cullen was a regular on their variety show. You know,
okay.
So, you know, the career goes back well before the stuff that guys of my and Jeremy's generations may think of him first and foremost for. But, you know, again, continued to even through very recently, if you want to put it into more current terms, just had a major voice role in Invincible. You when you hear about something like this, somebody passing that's in the middle of a current show, you think, what are they going to do? Well, happens to be this character actually passed in this past season. So.
And this isn't a show. Invincible is not something that we were just like casually aware of. This is something that we were engaging with frequently here on the show. So I was a fan of the character. You were a fan of the character. I think this show is really great.
And
so
one of the biggest
contribution.
One of the biggest streaming series around right now, animated or otherwise. It is an animated series, but like it's already been renewed two seasons out from where the season that just ended. This is a series that's not going anywhere. It's incredibly popular. So, you know, somebody that has been on that edge for years, but like speak to Jeremy, for you, this is more of an icon than it is for me.
I would say, okay. So, for those of you that aren't aware, Julio and I are within about 8 years of each other in age. And I feel like I was born a little too late for Transformers in the way that you were born a little too early for Transformers. And as somebody who unfortunately isn't a fan of the Transformers movies, I can't speak from the reverential perspective of a fan of that franchise. However, his voice is incredibly iconic. When you think of Optimus Prime, you are thinking of his voice, and that is generational, right? It doesn't matter if you are somebody our age or somebody that's the age of one of our children, Optimus Prime is Peter Cullen.
I would go so far as to say, what do you think of the Transformers?
I think that's valid voice.
Like there's a million other characters in the Transformers universe, and I won't pretend to know any of them apart from each other than Optimus Prime and Bumblebee and maybe Megatron, you know, because Megatron's the main bad guy. I should point out voiced by another equally iconic voice actor who is thankfully still with us, Frank Welker, whose career is maybe one of the most storied voice actors to ever live. going back to the 60s and still very much an active actor today. And in fact, if you look up the biggest grossing actors of all time that have had any role in any movie and they tabulate all of the movies together, Frank Welker is actually the biggest money making actor of all time because of the various voice parts he's done in so many movies. Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. As I look through Peter Cullen's filmography, I would say, as somebody who is just has always had a deep love for Disney, it would be his work in Winnie the Pooh. That would be the thing that resonated the most with me. And Eeyore is like this, he's almost like Charlie Brown dialed up to 11, right? Like, he's a very bummer character and very like low, sad delivery, and just it's an interesting character for a show like that. And I thought he did a great job in it. As I look over his credits, he was also involved with things like Gummy Bears, The Smurfs, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. I mean, Tailspin. It goes on and on for things that people of my generation would have grown up loving. I just wasn't even aware of his game, and I mean, iconic, right? Like,
I'm just going to point out, you can't ever say that Eeyore is dialed up to anything.
He's Charlie Brown dialed down to -2.
Yeah, dialed down to -11. That I'll buy. There is nothing up
valid
about Eeyore.
Valid.
But yeah, no, I mean, and I just a guy that had such a distinctive voice that, like, I don't think I've ever seen him do a voice in anything where I didn't immediately know, oh yeah, that's Peter Cullen.
Yeah. And a great voice. So somebody, and I know you can't tell by listening to me, I actually do professional voice work. I work for a company that does in-store audio advertising. And as Julio and I are people who are, you know, familiar with the convention circuits, and Julio much more than I am, but it is a craft and an art that is celebrated within a community, but that so many people often overlook. And I think this is an opportunity to at least, you know, honor the work of voice actors, because they are, like so many people in the film industry, unsung heroes. Just because we don't see their face doesn't mean they don't leave an impact.
Well, and again, if you ever questioned whether this man was an icon, at least to a certain audience, then you never went to a convention where he was a guest at that convention.
Because he did some big lines, I bet, huh?
Yeah, just to see the lines that he would draw. And I can tell you, as somebody who, you know, is part of the team that runs Pensacon, the number of requests we would get to bring him as a guest, and we tried more than once, we were just unfortunately never able to work it out. You know, just one of the most popular people in that world.
Like, shout out to our friend Evan Johns, who actually hosts a Transformer podcast with his friend, whose name is escaping me right now, but they're both real good guys, and they're both big fans of Transformers, and I'm sure he's feeling this loss. And so I did want to, again, just say that just because Julio and I weren't the biggest Transformers fan doesn't mean that his impact is, like, lost upon us or anything like that.
It's a character in Optimus Prime that has meant a lot to a lot of people. To the extent that, you know, very infamously, and when he died in the original Transformers, the movie, the animated film, that's one of those, like, traumatic moments that stands out for people, you know, the way, you know, Bambi's mother dying or Mufasa dying does for some people.
That's a good point.
And a character that I think just has inspired a lot of people. Inspired a lot of good in people. And some of that is the writing, but a lot of that is Peter Cullen's voice. And a lot of that is the man that Peter Cullen was that he brought to that character. So, you know, all respect to him, much sympathy to those who are mourning his loss. We've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
How'd you do, see, you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little brought down, because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung up by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Let me
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host Jeremy Branch is on the line with us, and we're going to round out our trio of icons that we've lost in the past few weeks here with the one that might in some ways hit me personally the hardest, and that is Tim Curry, who we lost at the age of 80 this week. Like, you cannot separate Tim Curry from Rocky Horror, and that alone makes him an icon. Like,
yeah, to your point, I feel like I'm kind of in the same boat with you. It's not that I feel more strongly in one way or another than with either of these people. It's just that it hits the closest to home for me because of the people that we are, right? Like the nights watching Rocky Horror Picture Show in the movie theater, or the nights going and seeing the live performance. And for somebody like me who, grew up right when the It TV miniseries happened to scare the hell out of me, and just really thinking he was great as Pennywise. And I know these aren't all the roles, but the exposure I had to Tim Curry, the very first time before I even knew who he was seeing him as Darkness in Legend. Mm-hmm. And people can say what they want about that movie. Darkness is freaking awesome, and Tim Curry's voice, talk about voice performances, is so rich and full and just incredible, and that performance as Darkness is one that stands out to me, but he's got so much more than that. But yeah, I just wanted to chime in and say I tend to agree with you that this, to me, felt the most like a personal loss, as in like, oh man, that person that's been attached to so many things that I loved is no longer with us, right?
Well, going back to Legend, the fact that he's able to emote under all of that makeup
is awesome.
Is amazing. And just, you know, throughout his career has done so many things like that, where it's like stuff that like didn't necessarily hit when it was first released, but has had the staying power over the decades that has made him a legend. And it's Legend, it's It, it's Clue, in which he's
Wadsworth, that I don't think a lot of people think about, but what a great movie.
It's Muppet Treasure Island, it's Home Alone 2, it's, you know, we could say that maybe the wrong octogenarian that appeared in, I won't say that, never mind.
No, you're good.
Yeah.
No notes needed.
Yeah, you could do the math on that. But at any rate, but it all comes back to, and it always will always come back to, the Rocky Horror Show. And Tim Curry, not just in the film, but in the actual very first production of Rocky Horror, originated the role of Dr. Frankenfurter. He was friends with Richard O'Brien, who wrote the show. Richard O'Brien cast him as Frankenfurter. He was the first Frankenfurter. He is and will always be the standard against which anybody that ever plays that role will be measured. And this is a show that's currently on Broadway again. There's been a revival in this past year. Tony nominated Luke Evans, just originated the role in this production, just finished his run. We're about to get a new run with the gentleman's name has left my head, but he's the lead singer of the Scissor Sisters, is taking over that role. I did just see this on Broadway. I did just get to see Rocky Horror on Broadway recently. Unfortunately, on a night that Luke Evans was off, but the understudy that went on was just phenomenal in the role and had a lot of like that Tim Curry quality in his stage presence and in his voice, which is the key to making this work. You know, there was a TV movie version of this done as like a semi live production. What was it? Mid to late 2000s, in mm-hmm. which Laverne Cox played the role, and she was fine. She played it very differently. And Tim Curry was actually in that production as the narrator, the criminologist. But it's a different presence, and I can understand wanting to go your own way with any character that you play.
Or you try to do a Tim Curry impression, which is never going to go in your favor, which is why what Skarsgård did with Pennywise, I thought worked well, because you're Tim Curry casts such a long shadow. But I guess what you're saying is the understudy that you saw and maybe even Luke Evans were kind of doing a Tim Curry performance.
Well, everybody's walking in his heels. Everybody who does that role is walking in his heels.
I watched Rocky Horror way too young, and that messed me up sexually, even to this day. I don't know what's going on because of Rocky Horror Picture Show. He's got so much swagger. Like, Dr. Frankfurter, like, you just look at, like, photo shoots from that. You know, there's the one where he's kind of, like, got his back bent and his hand on his hip, kind of doing a little bit of a Mick Jagger thing, mm-hmm. And he's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and it's like,
oh, he's a rock star.
He's just an absolute rock star. Perfectly said.
And so you have that iconography that will always be probably the first thing that most people are going to think of when they think of Tim Curry. Rocky Horror, as a theatrical production and as a film, is immortal. The fact that this film played and continues to play in theaters decades, literally, like, I think we're past 50 years now. I think it came out 75, 76. You know, is still playing theatrically, still making money theatrically, still doing midnight shows and having, you know, live cast accompaniment. You know, Rocky Horror will live forever.
Like a part of our vernacular, but if you're a listener and you've never seen a performance of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, or you've never been to a midnight screening, if you've never seen Rocky Horror Picture Show or seen the live version of it, then I really think that, like, get out there this Halloween. We're just a couple of weeks out, like literally a couple of weeks out from Halloween season. And to me, this is like quintessential. Every single October, you got to go and be a part of it. If it's your first time, you're going to go in there and you're going to wonder why the hell the audience is screaming and has props and knows the callbacks to certain lines. But the community is just so vibrant and alive and thriving. And like you said, 50 years on, it's still just such a celebration of transgressiveness and camp and horror, just so many things that we love wrapped up into one thing. And that movie does not work without Tim Curry. I mean, he was the secret sauce.
And there's, it's weird to say, because Frankenfurter is not really necessarily, in fact, I would say he's absolutely not a heroic character.
Oh no, he's a scumbag.
But there's so much that character represents and that character espouses that is a positive takeaway for life.
Yeah.
You know, the I mean, don't dream it, be it.
Yeah.
Is there a better message to take away from life than don't dream it, be it?
That's excellent. And I feel like that should be etched on his tombstone. It is such a powerful self-actualization tool. And yeah, Frankfurter, obviously, homicidal maniac, performed some essay in the movie, created a male bimbo for a sex toy. Not a great transvestite, but also the celebration of just being unapologetically who you are in the face of normalcy and people's norms and all of that kind of stuff, I feel like is just incredibly empowering. And I think that's why the film has endured and why the play has endured to this day. And
Absolutely deserves to be celebrated. But overall, like the band's career over and above, and I think he at times struggled with being, you know, inextricably identified with Rocky Horror. You know, you want it as an actor, you want to go on and do all kinds of things that people remember. And I think that he succeeded in that while still never completely distancing himself from the shadow of Frankenfurter. But when you look
I don't mean to be gross, but I did want to mention, for those of you that didn't know, that Tim Curry suffered a debilitating stroke back in 2012. Mm-hmm. So I don't imagine his quality of life was of such. This might have been good for him. And I can't even say that with any confidence, but we don't know where he was at the time, and if it alleviated a daily struggle that was challenging for him and for the people close to him. Maybe it was time, but he will be immortalized from now until forever.
He continued to do voice work up until his passing. In fact, he had been pretty active in the Star Wars universe. He had taken over the roles of Emperor Palpatine or Darth Sidious, or however you want to refer to him. So, you know, definitely continue to work, continue to have his wits about him. I mean, even I mentioned that television production of Rocky Horror that was done where he played the criminologist, that was after his stroke. He was, he played the character in a wheelchair, and that's fine. There was no reason not to. He did have trouble with mobility, but his mind was still sharp. And something that he admonished some people about online from time to time when they express things like that. But I mean, it's neither here nor there. In the end, it's another huge icon that we've lost, and it's a tough one.
Life is hard.
Somebody that meant a lot to me personally, and I think meant a lot to a lot of people personally. We will be back next week. Hopefully we'll have much more positive things to talk about at that time. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.